The first part of this science show comes from Boston, a city renowned for its intellect, culture and goodwill. Last time we were talking about regeneration, appropriately given the horrors of this week. Dr. Danny Spencer-Adams was telling us how the body can be persuaded electronically to rebuild organs and tissues, although the full secrets are elusive.
I believe that's where we're headed. I think it's a long way away. One reason being that there are so many hundreds, probably thousands of different ways of manipulating ions. We need to be able to figure out which one matters. We don't yet speak the language so that we can say, oh, okay, the right signal for your kidney is this, whereas the right signal for, you know, if you want your whole arm to grow back, you have to pump hydrogen ions out. But if all you want is new teeth, all you have to do is suddenly allow more sodium ions in for a few hours, and that will be enough to trigger it. We don't have that much resolution.
Yet. Professor Danny Spencer-Adams is at the Tufts Center for Regenerative and Developmental Biology in Boston. Growing back organs. We've heard of making new kidneys this week, and last year of using 3D generated scaffolding from the University of Wollongong, helping nerves and muscles to grow back. But Danny Adams is using the body's very physiology to trick it to do the same.
But do you have any idea of which organs, which parts of the body may be the best candidates so far?
I'm going to say the nervous system. I think that there's some amazing work being done with severed spinal cords, where if you put a voltage, so a charge difference, across the break, the nerves actually can follow it and they can heal. The problem with nerves growing back, or specifically with spinal cord injuries, is not that the nerves can't grow back, it's that there's scar tissue and it physically blocks them. But they're clearly responsive to electric fields, so for example, a voltage. In a dish, you can make a neuron crawl towards one pole. It's very simple to make a neuron go where you want it to go. So I would say that's the first place. That's going to be, well, an incredibly exciting breakthrough. But the whole system is kind of primed to listen to electrical signals. I don't want to give the impression that all we're going to need to do is, you know, step into this chamber and we'll zap you and your arm will grow back. There is an intricate intertwining between the chemical and the electrical. And that's one of the things we're really starting to try to get a real handle on. Why does voltage turn on a particular set of genes? How does that work? If you have an electrical signal at the membrane of a cell, how does that get turned into a gene being turned on or off? It seems to do it. We have absolutely beautiful work by Dr. Pai here at the Tufts Center for Regenerative and Developmental Biology, and he showed that in the developing face of a frog embryo, there are two groups of cells that are a little more negative on the inside than the cells around them. And those are the cells destined to become the eyes. And what he's shown is that if you make the wrong cells, so cells on the tail, for example, if you make them a little more negative, you get an eye on the tail. But how does that work, right? That's all it is. It doesn't matter if it's the same set of ions moving. All that matters is that you make it a little more negative on the inside and you've got a whole eye. Another component of the nervous system, by the way, is another reason I think that's going to be a really exciting and productive direction.
How often does some sort of malformation in the face happen or similar sorts of thing in human beings?
It's very, very frequent. In the Western world, it can be as much, I think it's 1 in 6,000. And of the children that do have craniofacial birth defects, I think 1 in 800 is cleft palate. It's a really surprisingly high number. We just don't know anything about it. And what I have found in my work is that you can recapitulate some of the craniofacial defects that we see in known diseases by tweaking electrical signals very, very early on in the embryo. So just as the cells are being born that much, much later will become the eye, if you change their voltage a little bit.
You're actually doing this in the lab here.
Yes, we're doing with
which creatures?
We use Xenopus laevis mostly, although I've done some work also in zebrafish, which is a new and exciting system for studying these things. In the frog, there's a very stereotypical sort of light show of cells that are changing their voltage relative to each other. And I adapted some dyes that people use in vitro. I've adapted them to use in vivo in the face. And if the cell is more negative inside, the dye glows brighter. So you make a time-lapse movie of that happening, and what you see is these bright spots where the eyes are going to be, and then it disappears. And then there's a bright spot where the mouth is going to be, and it disappears. And the whole forming spinal cord and brain on the inside is glaringly bright. It's very, very negative compared to the cells around it. And if I change those patterns by, for example, by injecting RNA for potassium channel, and now too much potassium is going to be leaving the cells, and those cells are going to become more negative on the inside. And then I make this film, and I can see that the left side of the face, the voltage is just too negative. It's just, I've messed up that pattern. It's not normal. Then I watch that tadpole grow up, and the left side of its face has some very typical kinds of deformations. A very classic one is that the eye is not separate. It's just stuck right next to the brain. So there's something about this very, very early tweaking of the electrical signals that leads to craniofacial birth defects. And so the idea is that if we can learn to recognize the pattern of that and see that it's going wrong, we can very easily go in and fix that. And the reason it's so easy is because neuroscience and psychiatry, and actually people who study stomach acid, have created this amazing array of drugs, the targets of which are these proteins that move ions around. So, for example, Prilosec, which is an over-the-counter stomach acid relief drug, what it does is it blocks the activity of a particular pump that moves hydrogen and potassium ions in and out. And normally, it stops that from working, so your stomach gets less acid. There's fewer hydrogen ions in your stomach. Well, it turns out, if you treat an early frog embryo with Prilosec, you get craniofacial defects. In fact, Prilosec, the one that we've studied a lot, it causes the left and right side of the body to get confused. So on the frogs, it'll put the heart on the wrong side, and it'll move the gallbladder to the wrong side. And there's something about that particular set of ion movements, potassium in, hydrogen out, that if you block it early on, it interferes with what's called the patterning of the embryo, and in this case, the left-right asymmetry of the embryo.
Well, isn't it impressive how secure, relatively speaking, the baby is in the womb, possibly protected from all that or not?
It is extraordinary. I'll come out of the closet as a total geek. Placenta is one of my favorite tissues. It's absolutely extraordinary. And to a large extent, it is protected. There's an interesting aspect of embryology or development, which is that it seems to accommodate a lot of slop. It can handle a lot of things not being quite right, and it just sort of fixes itself. There's something stable about normal. And I can say this now because it has actually been shown now. Many, many years ago, I was giving a talk, and I was talking about this left-right asymmetry thing. And one of the other things that can affect that is serotonin. And serotonin is one of the things that comes between the electrical signal and the chemical signal in many cases. And I was asked a question by the audience. We're told it's safe to take Prozac during pregnancy. And, you know, at the time, it was like, I can't say anything about it. I think I said, you know, I don't know about medicine. I don't know about these things. I would not do it. And I think in the last year, it has come out now that, yes, it does, in fact, affect patterning. It does have an effect. So the general caution, don't take medication. I think it's very important to apply it to these things that affect electrical signaling. Absolutely.
But you would actually, if you were treating the malformed baby or a baby that seemed to be threatening, you would go in with your own doses or whatever it was?
I might very well, yeah. If you find, for example, that something is going wrong because there are too many potassium channels, well, if you treat it with Prilosec, that might shut down enough of them to readjust it back to the normal signal. And what's so exciting about it is that's all you'd have to do, right? Whatever the end result of that, the end result could be devastating. It could be extra brains. We get extra eyes fairly frequently, or completely missing an eye. But we don't have to know anything about the nuts and bolts of that. We can go in and fix that first beginning of the conversation, and then let the cells themselves respond appropriately and prevent these terrible things that can happen as a result of those changes. So, and of course, that's always how you study it, right? You learn what it does if you take it out, and that tells you what it does if it was active, and then you learn how to manipulate its activity.
Frontline Biology in Boston. Professor Danny Spencer-Adams at Tufts University, orchestrating the growth of organs, one day for people.